Hey, so look, let's start this episode of How Sound with a clip that recently perked up my ears. I have no idea what she's saying, but I can't stop listening. Here's why I love this so much. A couple reasons, actually. First, the sound of the radio coupled with her voice at the start. I know it's kind of sort of similar to the theme of House Sound, but that's not what I mean. When I was a kid, maybe 10 years old or so, I used to listen to shortwave radio all the time. I would tool around the dial, tuning in faraway stations, broadcasting in German and Russian and languages that I had no idea what they were, because I just liked the sound. The start of this podcast brought back those memories.
Hello. Hi.
Yeah.
The other reason I love this is the mere fact that I can listen to it. This is the best part of podcasting, I think, that so many people can grab a mic and make something. What we're listening to, and please, sorry in advance, I've practiced saying the name of this podcast several times, but it's a podcast called Inuit Unikanjit. It's produced by CBC North, and the host is Mary Powder. She's an archivist with the Indigenous Language Archive Project at CBC North. And the podcast features archive recordings with Inuit people telling stories in their language, Inuktitut. Stories about the land and history and animals. And what they do on the podcast, which is so cool, they play the archive recordings for the descendants of the storytellers. And then they record the response of the descendants. It's genius and really a lovely way to use podcasting to preserve and promote culture.
Okay, have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Here's another podcast that reminded me of being a kid listening to shortwave. This is in English.
Now on BBC Radio 4, it's time for the shipping forecast, issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Friday, the 1st of November.
Couldn't you listen to that dude all day?
There are warnings of gales in Fitzroy, Seoul, Fastnet, Shannon and Rockall. The general synopsis at 1800, Atlantic low 997, moving rather quickly northeast, expected South Rockall 976 by 1800 Friday. The error forecasts for the...
Believe it or not, and with over a million podcasts out there, I bet you'll believe it, this is the Random Shipping Forecast podcast. The title is spot on.
40s Cromarty, southeast 5 or 6, occasionally 7 later. Occasional rain, moderate or good, occasionally poor. Fourth,
back in 2019, the BBC collected a random sample of maritime weather reports broadcast on BBC Four. And then they turned it into a podcast, because, you know, who doesn't like to listen to old weather reports? This totally makes my ears go zzz.
Shetland Isles, south, backing southeast, 4 or 5. Occasionally 6 at first, backing east, 5 or 6 later. Showers, moderate or good. And that completes the shipping bulletin.
This is How Sound, the backstory to great audio storytelling from PRX and Transom. I'm Rob, and if you haven't guessed it, I've put together another smattering of clips to share, pieces that perked up my ears recently. I'll forewarn you, there are a few swears here and there. There's also something I heard that nearly sent me through the roof of my car when I heard it. I was so pissed. Should I start with that? Okay, I'll start with that. So Phil Smith is a British audio producer. He and the team at Falling Tree Productions produced one of the best pieces about climate change that I've heard. It's really quite stunning, and it's moving, and it's clever, and it's artistically composed. I mean, it's just, it's lovely. The documentary came out in December of 2020, and it's called To Bear Witness. The idea behind the doc is fairly simple, but incredibly profound. Phil Smith interviewed several environmental activists about grieving, about mourning what's been lost, the destruction of ecosystems, the loss of species. They also offer thoughts on how to mark that loss, to bear witness, hence the name of the documentary. The show asks a large question as well. If we don't grieve, will we just continue on as we are, not doing enough about climate change? I'll get to what upset me in a minute, but let me play an extended clip from the opening of To Bear Witness.
Invocation.
You can tell by the phrase that it's not everybody's idea of a good time.
We are gathered here today.
It suggests something about the burden of what is being carried, and then it suggests the obligation to carry it at the same time. If everybody's there, everybody's looking, everybody has their eyes open, why is it that only some people bear witness? And why does the function exist at all as a kind of appointment among some on behalf of everyone else?
We who know nothing of ritual. We who long to belong. Called for our master of our lack of ceremonies, Stephen Jenkinson.
Well, apparently the capacity to bear witness is not democratically distributed across the population, or the inclination to do it, or the willingness, or some combination of all of those things. So what you end up with is a glimpse into the idea that bearing faithful witness to the way things are borders on the counterintuitive.
The calling of witnesses. We call Kofi Mauliklu, jurisconsult and activist, witness to deforestation.
I was born in a country, former British colony, that was called the Gold Coast, now called Ghana. And that was a very heavily forested, beautiful country with wide diversity of flora and fauna and animals and birds. And I remember vividly growing up surrounded by green everywhere, even in a small town in the Volta region of Ghana where I spent my childhood. And now, it's mostly deforested. It's one of the countries that is continuing to rapidly lose its forests. And with that goes the wide diversity of species. We're losing our water bodies, our rivers, lakes, lagoons. All of these things are disappearing. And if we felt the pain of loss each time. Many, many young people coming into this world are being denied the immense beauty that touched the soul into which I was born. And if we felt the pain of loss each time. Every time a tree gets cut, if only we could hear the cries of the trees, if only these cries could be heard.
And if we felt the pain of loss each time.
The criminality of the wanton destruction of life around us, tearing my soul apart. And if we felt the pain of loss each time.
That's an excerpt from To Bear Witness, produced for the BBC by Phil Smith and Falling Tree Productions. I can't encourage you enough to listen to the rest of the piece. Of course, we have links at transom.org. I will say the end of the documentary is a little strange. It doesn't sound like an ending. One of the main characters is talking, making a point, and then it just ends. I was like, wait, where's the rest of the story? But that's not what upset me. What made me apoplectic is what happens after the piece ends. Keep in mind the gravity of the piece. I mean, you heard it. It's somber and sober. Well, listen to this.
Suffering's part of the deal. And if you've ever, in the course of your life, said yes to a fellow human being romantically or sexually or spiritually or politically, then you know that you've let yourself in for suffering. Other things too, of course, but suffering is part of the package. This is what a grown-up knows, even in the West. A grown-up knows that suffering is your allotment.
This holiday season, treat yourself. Treat yourself to candy. Celebrate the holiday season with the Holiday Crush. They've sprinkled candy with a holiday theme and fun-packed challenge.
Ah, my ears. That is so maddening. What the? How in the name of Marconi did, like, look, the producers crafted an incredible audio bubble that envelops the listener, and then the BBC inserts that? A screaming ad for an inane and preposterous video game? Can you tell how upset I am by that? Oh my God. Along with the encroachment of commercial interests on non-commercial content, it's just, which upsets me too, it's just incredibly tone-deaf on so many levels. Who the hell thought that was a good idea? Am I overreacting? Please tell me if I'm overreacting. Oh, and one more note on this. If you stream the piece online, this is what you'll hear.
You know that you've let yourself in for suffering. Other things too, of course, but suffering is part of the package. This is what a grown-up knows, even in the West. A grown-up knows that suffering is your allotment.
The voice of Stephen Jenkinson ending this week's Between the Ears. To Bear Witness featured words and music written by the producer Phil Smith and cello improvisations by Lucy Railton. It was a Falling Tree production for BBC Radio 3.
Ah, that's more like it. Why can't that happen on the podcast? No, for reals. Like, why isn't that how the podcast ends? Okay, quick. Let's move on. Let's get to something that will calm my nerves.
Make it simple, make it rain.
Sometimes I think about the nature of our collaboration like trapeze artists who are like actually throwing each other in the air and catching each other all of the time. There's so much trust in being like, I said this thing, now like make it what I meant it more by taking the entirety of the sound I can make for my body and bending it to be more true.
That's Amelia Meath, and this is Shaking Out the Numb. I'm Erica Heilman. I called Amelia and Nick to talk about the last song on their new record, Free Love. The song is called Make It Easy, and I first heard it almost a year ago. I was sitting in my car in the JCPenney parking lot while my son was getting a haircut. It was January here in Vermont, and it was dark and cold, and I was seasonally depressed. And as soon as the song started, I had this feeling like I wasn't in the car anymore, or like I wasn't anywhere exactly. I kept thinking when I was listening to it, this song is about everything. Here's Nick and Amelia.
It's playing now. It's playing now.
Amelia sent me this voicemail.
I am dedicated to a handful of music podcasts. All Songs Considered, New Sounds, Sound Opinions, Song Exploder, and I eat them up as soon as they come out. They're all very earnest and didactic, I think it's fair to say. But Erica Heilman's foray into the genre is quite the opposite in such a compelling way.
Why do we want to know? Like, why do we need to hear it when, like, you can feel it? It's not gonna, you're not going to get the thing that you want to get, I think. You know, which is like what you want to do is to hold the fish, and you can't hold a fish.
No, it's easy. No, it's plain.
Erica produces Rumble Strip Vermont. I'm not quite sure how to describe Rumble Strip, so I'll use Erica's description. Heroic stories about regular people, carefully edited. I would also say it's subtly poetic. Erica is friends with Amelia Meath and Nick Sanborn. They're better known by their band name, Sylvan Esso, and they asked Erica to produce a podcast about their new album, Free Love. But instead of sitting in a perfectly designed studio for an interview, the three of them just hang out and talk while driving near a river in the backyard. It's a choice I never would have made, too much noise in the background. But maybe I should reconsider that position, because what ends up happening is that the conversation sounds more natural because they're in everyday settings. Freer maybe to respond to what's around them and maybe more inclined to say interesting random things that reveal character.
And then the rest of the work is getting it to the point where you can get the zzz to happen again. Like where you can get the flavor that appeared while you were getting the song to like come back. Isn't it weird how much the truth feels like a fucking magical pony?
Make it easy. Make it plain. Make it simple. Make it rain. Lift me up in.
The podcast is called Shaking Out the Numb. There's just 6 episodes. That's the right amount for sure. And they average around 12 minutes. Again, the right amount. It probably helps if you like Sylvan Esso, but if you don't, or maybe you've never heard of them, I highly recommend this episode. It's the last one, named after the song, Make It Easy. This is How Sound. I'm Rob. I've pulled together a handful of clips from podcasts I've heard lately that really perked up my ears. And wait till you hear the last one. I think it's the best. But right now, let's go to prison in Darwin, Australia.
Everyone's heard about the stereotypes about us. Yeah, we're shit.
Damaged. Junky.
Stupid. Bad mother.
Scum.
Disrespectful.
A burden.
Uneducated.
Dysfunctional.
Animals.
Tainted.
Low lives.
Just a number.
But what about the real us? What about our stories?
Not his stories. Her stories. We called it Bird's Eye View.
Because we wanted to shake things up and give people a new perspective on who we are. Plus, there's a lot of birds in here. Not just jailbirds, real birds. Come on, we'll introduce you to some of the wildlife.
Recently, we've had a little tribe of blue-winged kookaburras.
They've come and they go.
Same as us.
Like a bird with clipped wings, we too have lost our freedom.
Of course, some people stay a bit longer than others.
We can fly away, but sometimes we choose not to. And come back. Again and again.
Eventually, we all get to fly away free.
Let me jump in here and tell you what we're listening to. The podcast is called Bird's Eye View. It's produced by prisoners in the Darwin Correctional Center. There are over 1,000 people at the center. 80 of them are women, and several of those women were given microphones to tell stories from the inside.
No one's perfect in this world, and just because we've made a mistake does not define us. A lot of people have a preconceived idea of what a prisoner actually is.
I'll be honest, I get confused sometimes while I'm listening. The subject matter bounces around in fishtails, and I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to be following, and then suddenly you're back to the same subject that was a couple minutes ago. Fine, it's a little confusing. I just hang in there. And then there's like this tape here that we're listening to. It actually makes a great beginning, but it appears 27 minutes into the first episode. But if you can put those criticisms aside and just let the voices and anecdotes wash over you, by the end of an episode, you really feel like you've gone somewhere.
Without the birds around here in Sector 4, it would be very plain. No animals to look at. They're basically our pets in here. Because we feed them, we give them water. They know when to come for breakfast, lunch and dinner.
We're all in muster and one of the birds got one of the girls' cereal containers off the table and flew up on the fence and had it and was trying to open it.
I'm especially pleased by what they do here in the first episode when the women talk about the birds they share space with in the prison. It's surprising. It offers some insight into prison life and who these women are outside of their very tragic stories.
If you can't eat all your steak, you give it to the birds. And one night I threw my steak to the kookaburra, and it was smashing it around the stake in its beak as if it was still alive.
There's totally different kookaburras, not like the ones down south. These ones got blue wings, and the blues, oh, it's like a metallic blue, and they sound like this.
Bird's Eye View is the podcast. It's part of a storytelling project in the Darwin Correctional Center that's run by an organization called Story Project. And I love this aspect of the project. The podcast was part of a health program to address alcohol addiction. Using audio storytelling to address health issues is smart. It provides opportunities for self-reflection and self-expression. It teaches media literacy. And there's just something about a microphone that allows people to speak freely and honestly and, I don't know, maybe get somewhere inside themselves they haven't been before, you know, radiotherapy. So good on them for making this podcast. Speaking of getting inside, let's stay in Australia and get inside the absolutely crushed heart of Sophie Townsend. You know, when you read a great memoir or a book of any kind, really, and the writing is so grand, you just sigh with satisfaction? Well, you'll sigh often while listening to Goodbye to All This from Sophie Townsend and Eleanor McDowell. Sophie is a radio producer and writer who lives in Sydney, and the story is hers. Nearly a decade ago, you know what, I'll let the tape tell you what the story is about, but I do need to set it up. Sophie's married, she has two kids, and often she finds herself in a local coffee shop with other women who are married and have kids. Their time together is a kind of release valve. They sit and talk about the tribulations of family life and about all the annoying traits of their partners.
I tell them about Russell. He says he's exhausted, I say, in a way that makes it clear I have no sympathy for it at all. I'm sick of hearing about it. I mean, who do we know who's not tired? He isn't wildly happy at work, I know that.
Sophie's tired too, the burden of family and work and all the things. Her oldest daughter, whose nickname is Bear, is just about to become a teenager and has always wanted to visit Tokyo. So before puberty gets in the way of their relationship, Sophie and her daughter head to Japan.
And then Russell calls one night. And I can hear Poppy in the background yelling out to the dog. And Russell trying to keep his voice down. He talks the way you do when you've been reading medical reports. Like suddenly you know what's what, but in actual fact are as in the dark as ever. He says the tests indicate an iron deficiency, which is unusual in men, and could indicate internal bleeding, which may indicate a tumour. But, he says, that's the worst case. It's probably not that. It's probably nothing. More news the next night. The doctor has sent him off for more tests. They show a protein in his blood which could be an indicator of bowel cancer, but the doctor thinks it can't be right. Russell is scrupulous about screening. His mother had died of bowel cancer, but that marker, well, it means something's up. I'm sure it's nothing, he says. And again, we're out of sync. This time, me feeling scared and wanting him to take this seriously and him wanting it to blow over. I sit one morning on the subway, and I think about the call. And I cry quietly, hoping no one will see. Bear notices and asks me what's wrong. Missing your dad and your sister. That's all. I think she knows that it isn't all. She gives me the smallest of pats on my shoulder in that tentative way a child comforts their mother, not wanting to make it worse, not knowing what it is. She teases me for being homesick, hugs me and busies herself counting the subway stops. I don't think I sleep the whole night through the rest of the time we're in Tokyo. And the day after we're home, he has another test, this one to rule bowel cancer out. And it turns out that the bowel is healthy and fine, and there's nothing to worry about. And his specialist says that quite possibly Russell's exhaustion, his low iron, this protein marker in his blood, which after all is sometimes not a marker of cancer, are just anomalies. Relief. It's okay. And the night after the bowel cancer scan, we make dinner together and he looks lighter somehow. The girls do their homework and he and I move in the way only people who know each other and love each other can. In a rhythm only achieved out of long established patterns of padding around one another. He makes me laugh, a wry comment delivered deadpan. We talk politics and work gossip. He lectures me on a bit of arcane rock and roll history. And he laughs when I make fun of him. It's an evening full of those moments never spoken of in the coffee shop. A kiss, a shared joke, watching the way he twirls noodles around his fork, the way he folds his arms over his chest and sits back after dinner, the way he pours wine into my glass, the way he loves me.
I heard that bit of writing about the two of them in the kitchen, and it was just so satisfying. It perfectly straddles two worlds, the literary and audio storytelling. Sometimes when those two worlds meet, it's a disaster. The writing is too complicated, too flowery, too descriptive. Sophie Townsend, though, probably because of her background in both radio and writing, lands perfectly in the center of the two. And it makes me wonder about the confluence of audiobooks and podcasting. I have to believe there's a listening audience for the best storytelling from the world of books that is not just a book read aloud. It's rewritten and produced in a way that embraces the needs of good audio storytelling. Goodbye to All This is not a book, but the podcast does sound like a podcast audiobook combo, and I very much want to hear more of that. Okay, one last piece, another memoir, and I have no freaking idea how to set this up, but I'm going to try. It's part fiction, part nonfiction. Sharon Mashihi says on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is fiction and 10 is nonfiction, this podcast is a 6.5. Sharon is the producer, and the podcast is called Appearances, and I was smitten by it. There are several characters in the story, a mom, a dad, a brother, a boyfriend, all played by Sharon, except the boyfriend. Yes, she does all the voices. But there's one more character to mention, Melanie, only it's Sharon. Sharon plays a woman named Melanie, who is Sharon by another name. I know it's a little confusing. But anyway, the reason she does it is because Sharon can't quite come to talk about the difficulty of her life as herself. It's too painful. So she invented Melanie. Get it? There's mom, dad, brother, and Melanie, who is Sharon. All played by Sharon. Now, as for the story itself, at its core, Sharon slash Melanie desperately wants a child. But the concentric circles she draws around that longing complicate the story in such intriguing ways. One circle is Sharon slash Melanie, who she is in relationships. Another is her Iranian family. Another is the Iranian community in Great Neck, New York. But always at the center is the baby.
So I always knew that my family wasn't like the families I saw on TV, but I assumed that that was because we were Iranian. Not because we were particularly fucked up. And maybe we're not fucked up. I really don't know. Supposedly, we're a family-oriented family. Not like white American families you see, where people put themselves before the good of the group. My parents always taught us to put each other above all else.
They taught us that the most important thing you could do with your life is to raise a family. And I'm kind of on the same page. I mean, I want a kid. I want a kid more than anything in the world. But for my parents, everything has to happen the right way.
You have to marry a nice Iranian Jewish man who can afford a house.
You must move to Gretnek with that man and live within a 3-mile radius of us.
You will be responsible for driving me to and from all backgammon games.
Every 3 months for the rest of our lives, we will get highlights in our hair together at Puran's basement salon after going to the supermarket together. And like me, your hair will get progressively blonder year after year after year, until it is negative yellow.
And above all, you and your husband must be committed to the community.
You must be.
You must be.
Like your brother.
Like your brother.
Babak.
Babak.
Oh, so I can grow up and be just like you guys? So happy, so loving, just like our family? So accepting of one another? I'm 35 years old and you know nothing about anything in my life that matters. You know, I have a boyfriend. I have a boyfriend. I have a boyfriend. I have a boyfriend. Fine. I don't have anything. The community. It's them. They're the reason I can't have a boyfriend. The community is very powerful, actually. Because when my parents are around the community, it's all, I love my husband.
I love my wife.
But when the community is out of earshot, it's... Hello? Mom?
Melanie.
It's so late. Oh my God, it's midnight.
I can't sleep.
What's wrong?
Your father disappeared 5 days ago. I don't know where he is.
Again?
Melanie, I am so lonely.
Oh, Mom. Meanwhile, on the other line...
Hello?
Dad, what the fuck? Where are you?
I am in Istanbul.
Can you call your freaking wife?
I am busy.
When are you coming back home?
Babajan, I don't know. Maybe 3-4 weeks. I have a lot of business to take care of.
Right. Business. And then there's the fact that at my mother's 50th birthday, we all went around the table saying one nice thing about her. And when we got to my dad, he couldn't think of anything. Not one nice thing. And there's the time that my mother got her wisdom teeth out, and she got an infection, and we had to take her to the ER, and my dad was MIA. And the time I ran into the only Persian divorcee in Great Neck, and she told me how she and my mom are such good friends because, quote, they're both single. I mean, she has your dad, but you know what I mean. The thing is, he doesn't love her, but he stays with her. And she stays with him. And it's painful to watch.
Melanie, you're exaggerating.
My brother. He's just happy with everything the way it is. He's unaware that my parents' marriage is unhappy at all. And he aspires to have a marriage that's pretty much exactly like theirs. In fact, he's already engaged and will soon be following perfectly in their footsteps.
This is Jamshid. Jamshid is speaking. Jamshid, I am Jamshid. Melanie's dad. We have different definitions of love. To love is to do your duty.
Love is a matter of respect.
You just need to learn to compartmentalize. When you're alone, be as freaky as you want. But when you're around other people, just blend in, okay?
You have to talk to every your parents person has as their if they are the king and queen.
I mean, it's just so easy. I don't.
They're the king
it's so
and queen
easy
of
to follow
the family.
Rules. I don't understand why you would like blatantly not.
If you guys could just be quiet once in a while and listen, you'd realize that we're really not so different. I am just like you. My greatest dream in the world is to have a family, to have a kid.
Okay, find a husband and then we talk.
A husband. A husband.
How about it's time for the queen to get a foot rub?
I've been on again, off again with Ponch for 4 years now. I have a push-pull thing. He calls it cruelty, and maybe it is. It could be that I just struggle to make decisions. Okay,
Even we stay together and have a baby, odd, I walk away. One. One? One's not a number.
Ha! That line kills me. One's not a number. That's hilarious. Oh, the ways we torture ourselves trying to make a decision. There's an intangible I want to talk about regarding appearances. It's one of those you know it when you hear it sort of things. You know how sometimes when you hear a song or an album and you think, okay, that singer has been waiting to sing that song their entire life? It suits them perfectly. It's like the song and the singer meld into one. Appearances sounds like that. It feels like Sharon has been waiting her whole life to tell this story, to get it out of her body and on tape, because it just bursts through the speakers. Appearances is the podcast. Sharon Mashihi is the mastermind, the writer, the director, the sound designer, the performer, and it's a production of Mermaid Palace. And I think in terms of sheer artistic tour de force, Appearances is the most creative podcast I heard in 2020.
Oh, there's a curl. Make it easy. Make it plain. Make it simple.
There. How was that? Make it rain. Did those clips perk up your ears? Well, I hope so. Links to everything are at transom.org and the post for this How Sound. How Sound is a production of PRX and Transom. I'm sending out my endless thanks to Genevieve Sponsler at PRX and the crew at Transom in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Thanks for listening.
Make it easy. Make it plain. Make it simple. Make it rain.
From PRX.
And transom.org.